A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know that moment when you're traveling, you walk into a place, order the thing you think you know, and the person behind the counter looks at you like you've just insulted their grandmother? Not the food, the name. You said sub in Connecticut. Daniel wants us to wade into the grinder debate. He's got three questions. One, for the diehard nutmeggers, what actually makes a grinder unique? Two, for the skeptics, what's the counter-argument that it's just a sub with a local accent? And three, given that Herman Poppleberry grew up in stores, ate grinders on Horse Barn Hill, and then allegedly did some, let's call it, attentive traveling through Central Europe and the Baltics, what did the man himself think about this? So we're going to settle this, or at least make it properly unsettled, starting with what a grinder actually is.
A grinder is a long sandwich on a crusty roll served hot with sauce and melted cheese. That's the working definition. The thing that makes it not a sub is the heat and the structural engineering of the bread. A sub is cold cuts, lettuce, tomato, oil, and vinegar, on a softer roll that would disintegrate if you asked it to carry marinara. A grinder roll is shorter and wider than a sub roll, with a denser crumb and a harder crust. It's built to be baked.
So the bread is load-bearing.
The bread is absolutely load-bearing. A sub roll is a container. A grinder roll is a vessel. There's a difference. You fill a sub, you build a grinder, and then you put it in an oven until the cheese bubbles and the edges of the bread go crisp. The classic Connecticut grinder is meatballs or sausage with marinara and provolone. You can get other fillings, chicken parm, eggplant, but the template is hot protein, sauce, cheese, baked. The CT Visit article, which is basically the state's official tourism position on this, describes the grinder roll as a specific bakery product. It's not just any long bread, it's a thing.
And the term itself. Where does grinder come from?
Couple of theories. One is that it's from the grinding action of your teeth when you bite through that hard crust. Another is that it comes from the tool, the grinder, used to cut the bread. The term shows up in print in New England as early as the 1930s, same period that sub appears in New York and hoagie in Philadelphia. All of them emerge from Italian, American immigrant communities adapting the same basic form, bread, meat, cheese, to local ingredients and tastes. But the name stuck to different things in different places.
And the geographic weirdness is part of it. You hear grinder in Connecticut, Western Massachusetts, parts of Rhode Island. You cross into New York, it's a hero. Philadelphia, hoagie. Maine, it's an Italian, which is a sandwich, not a person.
Right, the term is a shibboleth. It tells you where someone's from, and that's where the emotional dimension kicks in. For a certain kind of Connecticut resident, calling a grinder a sub isn't just wrong, it's a category error. Like calling a bodega a convenience store, it misses the cultural specificity. The grinder is tied to local pizzerias and dealies and lunch counters that have served them for generations. It's not just food, it's place.
So that's the diehard nutmegger case. Let's lay it out properly. Three pillars. One, the bread. Must be a crusty Italian or French roll that can hold up to sauce without disintegrating. Two, it's always served hot, baked, or toasted after assembly. Three, the filling is dressed with sauce, not condiments. No mayo, no mustard, no oil and vinegar. Sauce. This is a structural difference, not a preference.
And the structural difference matters because it changes the eating experience. A cold sub is about layering. You bite through soft bread, cold meat, crisp lettuce, and the flavors stay distinct. A grinder is about integration. The heat melts the cheese into the sauce. The sauce soaks slightly into the bread. The whole thing becomes a unified object. You can't deconstruct a grinder the way you can deconstruct a sub. It's a different thing by the time it reaches you.
The bread-to-filling ratio also shifts. A sub can be overloaded, piled high with cold cuts, and the soft roll just stretches around it. A grinder has to balance. Too much sauce, the bread fails. Too little, it's dry. The grinder roll is denser specifically to manage that ratio. It's not just bread. It's a calculated response to a thermodynamic problem.
That's actually exactly right. The heat is the variable that changes everything. If you take a standard sub roll and put it in a 400 degree oven with marinara and cheese, you get a soggy mess in about 6 minutes. The grinder roll is engineered to prevent that. Shorter, wider, denser crumb, harder crust. It's bread designed for a specific thermal load.
Like a heat shield.
Like a delicious heat shield. And this is where the nutmegger argument gets genuinely interesting, because it's not just, we call it something different. There's a material difference in the product. The bread is different. The preparation is different. The eating experience is different.
But here's where I start poking holes. A meatball sub from a pizzeria in New Jersey. It's hot. It's got marinara. It's got melted mozzarella. It's on a roll that holds up to sauce. What's the difference?
The difference is, sometimes nothing. And that's the problem. The skeptic position isn't that grinders don't exist, it's that the category bleeds at the edges. A meatball sub from New Jersey and a meatball grinder from Connecticut can be functionally identical. The differences are real but continuous, not categorical. It's a spectrum.
So, the nutmegger says the grinder is defined by hot, sourced, specific bread. The skeptic says, so is a meatball sub from anywhere else.
And the skeptic has a point. The term sub doesn't mean cold. It means submarine sandwich, which is a shape, not a temperature. Plenty of places outside New England serve hot submarine sandwiches on crusty rolls with sauce and melted cheese. They just don't call them grinders. The preparation isn't unique to Connecticut. The name is.
The historical record doesn't help the uniqueness case either. All these terms, grinder, sub, hoagie, hero, Italian, they all emerge from the same period, the 1930s and 40s, from the same communities, Italian-American immigrants, adapting the same basic concept to local conditions. The grinder isn't older or more authentic. It's just the one that happened to stick in New England.
The Wikipedia entry on this is actually pretty clear. The term grinder appears in print in New England in the 30s, sub in New York around the same time, hoagie in Philadelphia in the 40s. None of them invented the long sandwich. They all just named it.
So, if the history doesn't settle it, and the preparation overlaps with things made elsewhere under different names, what's left? The bread. The grinder roll really might be the only defensible distinction. It's a specific bakery product that's less common outside New England. Shorter, wider, denser. But even that's not a binary. Plenty of pizzerias outside Connecticut use identical rolls and call their sandwiches subs.
The bread is the strongest argument, and it's still not airtight. I've had grinders in Connecticut that were served on rolls indistinguishable from what you'd get at a good Italian deli in New York. And I've had subs in New York on rolls that would pass the grinder test. The supply chain for Italian bread in the Northeast doesn't respect state lines.
Which brings us to the man who might have settled this, if he ever chose to, Herman Poppleberry.
I have a complicated relationship with this topic.
You grew up in stores. You went to UConn. Horse Barn Hill is a real place where students picnic. Your formative sandwich years were spent at pizzerias around campus that served grinders. You are, in some sense, a primary source.
I'm a primary source who's been thinking about this for decades, and I'm still not sure I have a clean answer. Here's what I know. Growing up in stores, the grinder was the default. You didn't say, let's get sandwiches. You said, let's get grinders. It wasn't a category choice, it was just what the thing was called. The first time I heard someone say, sub, I was maybe 12, and I remember thinking they were talking about something else entirely. A submarine. The vessel.
So for you, it was just the word.
It was the word, and the word was attached to a specific thing. Hot, sauced, cheesy, on bread that crunched. But here's where it gets interesting, and this connects to what Daniel's really asking. I left stores. I traveled. Central Europe, the Baltics. And I encountered other long sandwich traditions. The Polish zapiekanka, which is an open-faced baguette with mushrooms and cheese baked. The German belegtes Brötchen, which is... Look, it's a roll with stuff on it, but the roll is different, the stuff is different, the whole grammar of the thing is different. And the Baltic open-faced sandwiches, which are a completely different philosophy, rye bread, precise toppings, eaten with a knife and fork.
So you had a comparative frame.
I had a comparative frame. And what it taught me is that every culture thinks its bread with stuff on, it's unique. And they're all right, and they're all wrong. The zapiekanka isn't a grinder. The grinder isn't a zapiekanka. But they're both answers to the same question. What do you do with bread and whatever you have? The specifics matter enormously to the people who grew up with them. They matter less the further you get from home.
There's a line attributed to you. A listener dug this up from a 2019 letter to a UConn alumni magazine. The grinder is the taste of home, but home is a place, not a category.
I wrote that. I stand by it. The grinder is real as a cultural artifact. It's not real as a culinary category. It's a local name for a local preparation. The insistence on uniqueness is a form of placemaking, not gastronomy. It's about saying, this is ours, we made this, this is what we do here. And that's valuable. It's just not a scientific taxonomy.
So the die-hard nutmegger is right, that the grinder is distinct. And the skeptic is right, that it's not unique. And you're saying both things are true at the same time.
I'm saying the argument is the point. The fact that people argue about, it's what makes it real. Nobody argues about whether a hot dog is a sandwich because nobody's identity is tied up in hot dogs the way Connecticut's identity is tied up in grinders. Well, some people's identity is tied up in hot dogs, Chicago, but that's a different episode.
The identity dimension is what the skeptics miss. When you tell a nutmegger that a grinder is just a sub, you're not making a culinary observation. You're telling them their home isn't special. And people will defend the specialness of their home with a level of intensity that looks irrational from the outside.
And it's not irrational. It's completely rational if you understand what's being defended. It's not the sandwich. It's the memory of every grinder you ate after soccer practice, or with your dad on a Saturday, or on Horse Barn Hill in October when the leaves were turning. The sandwich is a container for all of that. Calling it a sub empties the container.
The intelligence service allegations, the travels through Central Europe and the Baltics, the thing Daniel's hinting at, there's a persistent rumor that you were paying a particular kind of attention during those years. The kind of attention that gets described in alumni newsletters with careful phrasing.
The 2004 UConn alumni newsletter. I know the one. Mr. Popplebury's travels through the region coincided with a period of heightened interest in local infrastructure and personnel. That's a quote. It's also, look, I'm not going to confirm or deny anything, but I'll say this. When you spend time in a place, really paying attention, you notice what people fight about, and food is always one of the things people fight about. Because food is identity made edible. The grinder debate isn't about bread. It's about belonging.
And you'd have been good at noticing that, wherever you were and whatever you were doing there.
I'd have been good at noticing it because I had my own version of it. I knew what it felt like to care about a sandwich. So when I saw someone in Krakow caring about a zapiekanka, or someone in Riga caring about the exact proportions of an open-faced herring sandwich, I recognized the thing I was looking at. It's the same thing. Different bread, different filling, same thing.
The Popplebury synthesis, then. The grinder is a real thing, culturally. It isn't a real thing culinarily. The debate is about identity, not taxonomy. And anyone who tells you it's just a sub is missing the point. But anyone who tells you it's completely unique is overselling the point.
That's fair. I'd add one thing. The grinder roll really is different. The bread isn't a myth. It's a specific product with specific properties. If you've never had a grinder on an actual grinder roll from a Connecticut bakery, you haven't had the thing the nutmeggers are defending. The problem is that even in Connecticut, not every place uses the real roll anymore. The category is degrading from the inside.
Supply chain homogenization.
The same forces that make every American Main Street look the same are coming for the grinder roll. Fewer bakeries making it, more places substituting a generic Italian roll. The thing that made the grinder distinct is slowly disappearing, which is why the debate is getting louder even as the distinction gets smaller.
That's a pattern. The less distinct something becomes, the more fiercely people insist on its distinctness.
The Chicago hot dog, the Maine lobster roll, the St. Louis gooey butter cake, all of them are real things with real histories. All of them are also identity markers that get defended with more passion than the physical object can really support. And all of them are slowly being smoothed out by the same economic pressures. The grinder isn't special in this, it's just the one we're talking about today.
Before we go any further, I want to circle back to something. You said the grinder is hot sauce cheesy, but there are cold grinders in Connecticut. Turkey grinders, tuna grinders, they exist.
They exist and they're controversial. A cold grinder is basically a sub that someone in Connecticut is calling a grinder out of habit. Purists will tell you it's not a real grinder. The Daily Mail article makes this point explicitly. The hot versus cold distinction is the primary differentiator. If it's cold, it's a sub wearing a grinder's name tag.
So even within Connecticut, the category is contested.
All categories are contested. That's what makes them categories and not laws of physics. The grinder is a social construct built on top of a physical object. The physical object is real. The social construct is negotiated. And the negotiation is the thing Daniel's asking about.
Let's talk about Frank Pepe's for a second. New Haven, famous for pizza, also serves grinders. If you order a grinder at Pepe's, what are you getting?
You're getting a hot sandwich on a crusty roll, probably meatball or sausage, with marinara and cheese, baked in the same oven they use for the pizza. The bread comes out with a slight char on the edges. The cheese is bubbled and browned. The sauce has reduced slightly in the heat. It's a grinder. It's also, if you drove it to New Jersey and served it, a really good meatball sub. The sandwich doesn't change. The word changes.
Which is the whole thing in a sentence.
That's the whole thing in a sentence.
So, where does this leave Daniel's question? He wanted both sides. The nutmeg aside is that the grinder is defined by specific bread, heat, and sauce, and that these create a meaningfully different eating experience from a cold sub. The skeptic side is that hot sauce sandwiches on crusty rolls exist everywhere, and the distinction is regional branding, not culinary science. The Poppleberry side is that both are true, and the argument is the point.
And the Poppleberry side comes with a footnote about the bread supply chain slowly eroding the distinction, which means the argument is going to get louder before it gets quieter.
We should eat one. For research.
We absolutely should. I know a place.
You're both missing it.
Go on.
The thing that makes a grinder isn't the bread or the sauce. It's the oregano.
The oregano.
1994. I worked 2 summers at a place in Willimantic called the Grinder's Grinder. Tiny shop. 3 things on the menu. Meatball, sausage, eggplant. That's it. No cold options. No turkey. No tuna. The owner was a man named Sal, who had been making grinders since before I was born. He put oregano in the sauce, but he also put oregano on the bread before the cheese went on. Dried oregano, right on the roll, under the sauce. It bloomed in the heat. That's the taste. I can still taste it.
The oregano bloomed.
You put dried oregano on bread and heat it. It releases oils you don't get from oregano cooked into sauce. Different compound. Different smell. Sal said if you didn't do that, it wasn't a grinder. It was just a hot sandwich.
That's... I've never heard that. But it makes sense. The sequence of assembly matters. Oregano under the sauce versus oregano in the sauce is a different chemical delivery system.
I made hundreds of them. Maybe thousands. 2 summers, 6 days a week. The oregano goes on the bread first, then the sauce, then the cheese, then the oven. If you do it any other way, you're making a sub.
Did Sal say where the oregano thing came from?
Said his grandmother did it that way. Said it was the old way. Said everyone used to do it, and then they got lazy.
The old way. There's always an old way.
The shop had a secret menu item, not on the board. Regulars knew to ask for it, called the Poppleberry.
I'm sorry, what?
The Poppleberry. Meatball grinder, extra sauce, side of pickled vegetables. Sal said it was named after a customer who used to come in. Worked for the government or something, never said a name. Just the government guy. This would have been 80s, maybe early 90s. Before my time. The shop closed in 2001. Sal took the recipe to his grave.
Extra sauce and pickled vegetables.
The pickled vegetables were the thing. Sal made them himself. Giardiniera, but not Chicago style. More vinegar, more pepper. He said the government guy always asked for extra.
I ate a lot of grinders in the stores area in the 80s. I don't specifically remember a place called the Grinder's Grinder, but Willimantic is right down the road, and I did like pickled vegetables.
Did you work for the government?
I'm not answering that.
Fair.
The point is, you're both right about the identity thing, but the physical object matters too. The oregano on the bread. The giardiniera. The specific way Sal assembled the thing. That's not identity, that's craft. And craft is real, even if the category is fuzzy.
The oregano under the sauce. I'm going to try that.
Use dried. Fresh burns.
What happened to the shop?
Sal retired. Building's a vape store now. I still have one of the menu boards. The little one, from the counter. It's in a box somewhere.
Of course it is.
The thing about a grinder is, you can't replicate it from a description. You have to eat one from a specific place, made by a specific person, who learned it from someone else. That's what the Nutmeggers are defending. The lineage. The lineage is real. The concept is just words.
The lineage is real and the concept is words. That's a better summary than we managed in 20 minutes.
I've been sitting here the whole time.
I know. I know.
The oregano detail changes something for me. Because if there are specific craft techniques that are local, techniques you only learn by working in a Connecticut grinder shop, then the grinder is more than a regional name. It's a regional practice. And practices can be documented. They can be preserved. They can be lost.
Sal took his to his grave. How many other Sals are there?
Fewer every year. That's the real story, not whether a grinder is a sub. Whether the people who know how to make one the old way are still around to teach it.
The oregano goes on the bread first. Write that down.
Noted. You...
The open question this leaves me with is bigger than sandwiches. If the grinder is real as a cultural artifact, but not as a culinary category, what does that say about every other regional food debate? The Chicago hot dog. The Maine lobster roll. The Philly cheesesteak. Are they all just the same thing, local names for local preparations, defended with more passion than the physical objects can support? Or are there Sal-like figures in each of those traditions, holding on to specific techniques that make the thing distinct?
Probably both. The techniques are real and the passion exceeds them. That's how culture works. The thing itself is never quite as big as the feeling about the thing.
And the feeling about the thing is what keeps the thing alive. If nobody cared whether a grinder was a sub, there'd be no reason to keep making the grinder roll. The argument preserves the practice.
Even if the argument is about the wrong things.
Especially then.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the oregano revelation. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you have a food debate you want us to sink our teeth into, or if you worked at the Grinder's Grinder in Willimantic and remember the Poppleberry, write in. We read everything. The show lives at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.